This is 8:31 a.m. and I call the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologist Examiners to order. Ms. Michelson, will you please call the roll?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dinar?
Present.
Dr. Medina?
Present.
It's noted for the record, Dr. Stewart is not present yet. He indicated he'll be joining later, but we still do have quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Michelson. Let's actually go to number four. We'll come back to number three when Dr. Stewart joins. Number four on the agenda is case discussion and decision. And before we get into the cases, I just wanted to share important information for all of you in attendance. The Complaint Screening Committee, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H, may dismiss the complaints appearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to any telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website, according to ARS Section 32-2081, subsection H1. Upon a vote of a majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item listed on the agenda. Pursuant to ARS Section 38-431.03, subsection A2 to receive confidential records, or subsection A3 to receive confidential legal advice from the board's attorney, Ms. Jean Galvin. Please keep in mind that the chair, which is me, reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based upon the party's request. Please use initials only for patients, children, and the complainant. In addition, do not state any specific diagnosis in open session. Keep in mind that the content of many records involved in these complaints is confidential and the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. A person or a representative of a person who has filed a complaint and is present at today's meeting may make a brief statement to the committee of up to 5 minutes when prompted by the chair. Also, the licensee or respondent who is the subject of the complaint will also have an opportunity to make a brief 5-minute statement when prompted by the chair. Please note that only individuals directly involved in the complaint, which are the complainant and the respondent, may address the committee and make a statement. If the committee wishes to hear from any other party, it will make this request during the case review. For everyone in attendance, please ensure that your audio remains on mute. When prompted by the committee to speak, the complainant, respondent, and their legal representatives may unmute themselves at that time. Please also note that individuals in attendance who speak out without the committee's approval will be warned twice by the chair not to interrupt. If the interruption continues after the second warning, the individual will be removed from the Zoom meeting and not permitted to re-enter. So, with those important preliminaries in mind, let's go to the first complaint, which is 25-04 against Jennifer Jones Greenspan, and Dr. Medina is the lead committee member on this. Dr. Medina, will you please provide an overview?
Thank you, certainly, Mr. Chair. This is a summary for complaint number 25-04 against Dr. Jennifer Jones Greenspan, CID holder of license number 4183, issued in April 2011. Complainant DX filed a complaint against Dr. Jones Greenspan, alleging that DX was required by the Arizona Board of Nursing to undergo a psychological evaluation to determine if she can practice safely as a nurse. The ex chose to complete the evaluation with Dr. Jones, and the cost was going to be $1,200. An appointment was scheduled for May 2024. During the evaluation, the ex observed that Dr. Jones had a paper in her hand but was not writing much. The ex informed Dr. Jones that her sister had passed away due to a fentanyl overdose, and that this event was a trigger for DX's depression. Less than 24 hours after meeting with Dr. Jones, the Arizona Board of Nursing investigator requested that DX undergo a drug test and would need to supply a statement about her fentanyl overdose. Dr. Jones' report incorrectly stated that the ex overdosed on fentanyl, not her sister. The ex contacted Dr. Jones, asking her to recall the details of what the ex stated in to her during the evaluation, as this misinformation was making the ex look bad. The ex took the drug test as requested by the board and paid $260 for it. The ex requested to have the information changed before going changed slash corrected before going to the board, but it seemed like it was not going to happen. She did not receive and that she would not be receiving her nursing license due to the report. Dr. Jones apologized for the incorrect information in the report, but stated that the ex will have to speak with the board about this issue. Dr. Jones submitted her response to the board on a timely manner in September 2024. In her response, Dr. Jones shared that she began conducting evaluations for the Board of Nursing, for the Arizona Board of Nursing in 2022. And she is also on the list of approved evaluators for three other Arizona healthcare boards. DX has a legal history of a 2018 DUI and a DCS case regarding her arrest for assault on the child's father over a parenting exchange. The Arizona Board of Nursing referral requested current diagnosis in consideration of substance abuse status, recovery relapse status, results of testing, psychological status, effectiveness of previous treatment, recommendations, and assessment of ability to function safely. The ex met with Dr. Jones on May 2024. Dr. Jones informed the ex that she typically takes about a month to turn around the report. And on June 2024, Dr. Jones met with the ex to review the evaluation results and explained that she was ultimately not able to make a conclusion as to whether or not the ex was able to function safely because the assessment results were largely invalid due to inconsistent and underreporting on the part of the ex. The ex stated that she was confused at that meeting and did not understand how she could have invalidated the testing. Dr. Jones recommended that the ex complete an additional assessment no sooner than 6 months to answer the question of whether she was safe to practice because Dr. Jones was unable to make an opinion on that issue based on the ex's current results. The ex abruptly left this appointment, so normal fact-checking did not occur. The ex left about 4 minutes into the review appointment. Dr. Jones stated that had she completed the debriefing session, she would have realized that the statement the ex made about fentanyl overdose were not referring to her, but rather to her sister, who died as a result. This inaccuracy would surely have been identified, and Dr. Jones could have rectified the error prior to submitting the report to the Board of Nursing. Correcting this flaw would not have changed the conclusions that the available data did not support justifiable conclusions, but it would have eliminated any unwarranted inferences about the ex based on the assertion that she had abused fentanyl, that it had led to disastrous consequences. On June 18, a couple weeks after that, a week after that appointment, the ex contacted Dr. Jones, apologized for leaving the appointment early, and to request a copy of the report, which was mailed to her. On June 25th, the ex contacted Dr. Jones regarding the error in the report about the overdose. The Arizona Board of Nursing took until around August 28th to okay a report addendum. In the meantime, Dr. Jones informed the ex that reevaluation could provide clarification because she still recommended the ex undergo a reevaluation in 6 months. And that Dr. Jones was waiting to hear from the Board of Nursing regarding an addendum to the initial report. And it is common policy that evaluations are not automatically corrected once submitted. Rather, the referring board must usually request that additional effort when warranted and desired. And such was the case here. Dr. Jones never recommended drug testing in her report, so this was apparently a decision made by the Arizona Board of Nursing. Dr. Jones has written an addendum report, and she also refunded the $1,200 charge for this evaluation. Dr. Jones is in the process of taking relevant continuing education regarding evaluation and testing, seeking consultation on her process, and networking with the Arizona Psychological Association membership to obtain additional support, collaboration, and opportunities for consultation. And this concludes my summary to the committee.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Is the complainant DX present? Maybe one of the phone numbers. Now would be the time to unmute DX if you're present and state your initials for the record. Hearing none, let's go to Dr. Jones. Dr. Jones, do you prefer Dr. Jones or Dr. Greenspan or Dr. Jones Greenspan?
Dr. Jones is fine.
Thank you. And I believe you and your attorney, Dr. Aiken, is here. Thank you for being here. Now would be the time to make a statement of up to 5 minutes, and then I'm sure as the committee, we will have some questions for you. You're muted, Dr. Aikens.
There we go. We've got a new format today, so I'm still getting used to where the buttons normally are supposed to be. In any event, let me just introduce myself for the record. I'm Farron Aikens, counsel for your licensee, and I'll let her introduce herself and then she'll return the process back to me.
Good morning, Dr. Jennifer Jones Greenspan.
Returning back to me, we have decided that there's really no necessity in taking additional time to do an opening statement with regard to this matter. We think everything has been made clear from the response, and certainly if you have questions, we'll be happy to address those. But otherwise, no additional statement it seems necessary at this point in time.
Thank you. Dr. Medina, do you have questions for Dr. Jones?
Yes, I have one question, Dr. Jones. Is it customary in the Board of Nursing and in your work with other boards that in order to submit an addendum or correct something that you noticed was wrong on a report, you need like an order from them to do so?
It's not necessary that I need an order from them, but usually when there's a problem that has occurred, there's a communication that happens between me and the representative with the board about how to address that issue. So I did ask the board what they wanted to do in regard to this situation and didn't get any response from them. So I was waiting to see what they wanted to do regarding the situation, particularly in that it didn't change any of my recommendations for the evaluation.
Sure. Okay, thank you. That's my only question.
So, thank you, Dr. Medina. Dr. Jones, just sort of, I know there is a detailed timeline in the record, but I want to hear it from you. So, you realized there was an error in the record that you submitted to the Board of Nursing, and then DX contacted you about the error. How quickly after you were notified of the error in the report did you contact the Board of Nursing for a possible correction of the report that you had submitted?
So I wasn't made aware of the error until DX contacted me after she received the report on the 26th of June or whatever, when she texted me saying that that information was correct. At that point, we were in discussion of her doing a reevaluation with me, and so I advised her that that's something that we could correct on reevaluation, or if she chose somebody else to do the evaluation, the reevaluation, that she could let them know that that information was not correct and they could correct it in their record, and that it wouldn't change any of my conclusions in the evaluation. I sent the report to the board shortly after we initially met on June 11th. I believe I sent it to them on the 18th, and requested that if they had any questions or concerns about the report, that they contact me, by phone or email or whatever. As soon as DX left my office on the 11th, I did contact the board to speak with them about the concerns that she had and the fact that she was upset in the results, or in the conclusions, being that she would have to be reevaluated. And I didn't receive any response back from the board as of that moment. I did contact them again, I believe in July, to as a phone call to see what they wanted to do as far as this report, since it was still kind of out there. It was my understanding through my communications with DX that she was going to see me for the reevaluation, because she had continually texted me that she would, and was we were working on scheduling a date in November for the reevaluation. So my assumption was that I could correct that when I did the reevaluation report.
And to the extent you know, where in the process is DX's case with the Board of Nursing?
As of today, I am not sure. When she came to me, she was in the process of applying for licensure, and they had noted these issues in her background regarding criminal history, and that's why they required the evaluation.
So I don't have any other questions at this time, Dr. Medina. I see you shaking your head no.
No.
Okay, then let's go into discussions unless Dr. Akins or Dr. Jones would like to make some closing remarks.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I think we've presented everything that we feel that the board would need or the committee would need in order to make a fair and unbiased decision on this. We're simply asking that the matter be dismissed. It was an unfortunate error. Once it was caught, the licensee did everything necessary and possible to make corrections. The fact that the board was slow in responding was not her fault. She reached out to them twice. The fact that she was leaving open the idea of being able to do the reevaluation indicates to me that the licensee from the nursing board or the applicant didn't somehow hold ill feelings about the error in the report, and eventually the decision was made otherwise. So we'd simply ask that the matter be dismissed at this point.
Thank you. Okay, then let's go into our deliberations. And Dr. Medina, do you want to get us started?
Certainly. It was an unfortunate error. I do believe that Dr. Jones Greenspan, tried to correct it. Unfortunately, it wasn't cut earlier due to the, complainant sort of leaving that appointment. I do believe that, at that point, it would have been caught. The fact to me that it doesn't really, even changing that doesn't really change the conclusions of the report, because it's heavily based right on test results, and those don't change by that fact. To me, I lean towards dismissing the case, because really no big changes would be made by addressing that. And I do believe Dr. Jones Greenspan, did her best to address and correct the error.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Medina. I agree. I think the error was inadvertent, and once it was brought to Dr. Jones's attention, it was at least on her part swiftly corrected. Do you want to make a motion, Dr. Medina?
Sure. I move to dismiss case number 25-04 against Dr. Jennifer Jones Greenspan.
I second. There is a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Jones, for being here, and Dr. Akins as well.
Thank you, committee members.
Thank you.
All right, then let's move on to number 4B on the agenda, which is case number 25-08 against Golnaz Hansen, who holds an authorization with SciPact to practice in Arizona. And I am the lead on this case, so I will provide a summary. Let me pull up my notes. Dr. Hansen holds, as I said, a SciPact authorization, which was issued in 2022, and she currently operates a private practice based in Illinois. Complainant DL is a licensed attorney in Louisiana and the CEO for a company called Prevent ESA Fraud. ESA is Emotional Support Animal. The company website for DL states that it is a nonprofit organization formed to educate the general public, housing providers, and airlines of the rights, law, and responsibilities of legitimate emotional support animal ownership. In 2020, Dr. Hansen entered into a managed service agreement with Greater Guide Inc., which operates to diagnose and prescribe letters of emotional support animals and service dogs online. In August 2024, this board received DL's complaint against Dr. Hansen, alleging she issued an emotional support animal letter dated June 21, 2024, for an individual located in Arizona, despite never having been in contact with this person. The person filled out a form on the Greater Guide Inc.'s website and received a signed letter. Dr. Hansen represents that she did not author this letter and had no knowledge of it prior to receiving the board complaint. This concern prompted Dr. Hansen to terminate her agreement with Greater Guide Inc., and the termination agreement that is signed by both parties was effective September 5, 2024. The board has jurisdiction because of the SciPact Statute 32-2087, because we are the receiving state and we can take adverse action. In further support of Dr. Hansen's request to dismiss the complaint, she states that the complainant also runs a competitor ESA letter firm, and DL is apparently listed as one of the partners or board members or advisors of this competitor firm. And a screenshot of the competitor's website is available in the materials today. So the implication is, perhaps DL has an axe to grind against Greater Guide. But as far as Dr. Hansen is concerned, she was not aware that this letter was issued in her name with her signature. And as soon as she realized that Greater Guide was sending out these letters, she took steps to terminate her relationship with them. And she has never evaluated and never been in contact with the person to whom Greater Guide had issued the letter. That concludes my summary of the case. So at this time, let's see if complainant DL is present. If you are, please unmute yourself, state your initials for the record, and you may make a statement of up to 5 minutes. All right, hearing none, let's move on to Dr. Hansen. Dr. Hansen, thank you for being here, and I believe you are represented by your attorney. I'm sorry, I'm going to mispronounce your name, but would you please introduce yourselves, and you may make a statement of up to 5 minutes.
Okay, thank you. Yes, good morning, members of the board. My name is Natalia Ter-Gregorian, and I'm counsel for the licensee, Dr. Gulnaz Hansen, who is also present today. And I appreciate that the summary that you just presented to the board. You correctly pointed out that the complaint filed by DL alleged that Dr. Hansen issued an ESA letter in June 2024 to an Arizona resident with whom she did not have any contact. And that is the allegation in the complaint. And the reason we believe dismissal is appropriate is because Dr. Hansen never issued any letter to any Arizona resident. She did not issue the letter in question. She didn't write that letter. She didn't review or approve that letter. And she did not in any way adopt as her statements the representations in that letter, which were not accurate, right? So the complaint should be dismissed for that reason alone, because of the allegation is that she drafted and disseminated this letter saying, AW, I'm treating AW, I have a therapeutic relationship with AW, and I diagnosed with AW with a DSM-5 diagnosis that makes her eligible for the ESA letter. That those were not Dr. Hansen's words or conclusions, and that's not what occurred, right? So through this contractual relationship with Greater Guide, what Dr. Hansen did do was she reviewed some of the records that were submitted through an online questionnaire, and there was a multi-step process. And once the records came to her, her understanding was that she was conducting a review of the responses, the questionnaire responses, to determine if the responses were consistent and could theoretically render the individual submitting that information eligible for an ESA letter. And she believed that there was going to be a subsequent review. And that actually, I think, turned out to be true. I think the record or the board's file does indicate that there was a subsequent consultation or a subsequent review after Dr. Gulnaz completed her intermediary review process. And we know that because none of the documents or the records that were available to Dr. Hansen for purposes of her review contained any information about the size, breed, name of the proposed emotional support animal in question, but the letter contains that information. So that there is evidence in the record to suggest that there was some subsequent follow-up and review, but Dr. Hansen was not involved in that. And she was surprised to see that a letter was being issued, you know, under her name. If you compare the signature, her known signature on the Greater Guide Agreement with the signature on the letter from June 2024, you'll see that they are dissimilar. It is not her signature. The letter also assigns an email address and a phone number that she, Greater Guide, did not inform her of that either. And she was not aware of, you know, of those contact information assigned to her. She did not have access to those email or phone numbers. And that also kind of compounded the issue here, which is unfortunately Dr. Gulnaz discovered as a result of this complaint process that, Greater Guide was engaging in a lack of transparency and business practices that she did not agree with or approve. And that's what prompted her to terminate that relationship because she, you know, she's been a mental health professional for over two decades. She's been a psychologist since 2010, received her PhD in psychology in 2010, has always maintained all of her licenses in good standing in multiple jurisdictions, and takes that responsibility really seriously. And I think Dr. Gulnaz expected the entity she was contracting with to be just as diligent and just as scrupulous. So this process uncovered, you know, practices that Dr. Hansen had not ratified or affirmed or agreed with. And that's why she went ahead and terminated that. And to Greater Guide's credit, they didn't object. They didn't, you know, they agreed to terminate retroactively to September 5th, which was the right thing to do considering the circumstances in this case. So at the outset of Dr. Hansen's career, she worked in a lot of public sector employment positions, and she also, one of those positions involved working with veterans. And it was when she was working with veterans that she actually was able to observe firsthand the therapeutic benefits of having emotional support animals. So once she transitioned to private practice and she was presented with this opportunity to, you know, facilitate eligible individuals to get the CSA documentation, she saw that as providing a service to people who actually did suffer from a mental health condition that made them eligible for an emotional support animal. And so she did this in addition to her, primary occupation, providing therapeutic services to clients, and was doing this in an effort to make that option available to people who otherwise maybe would not have the ability to, either have a therapist that they were a dedicated therapist they were working with, or a therapist who was willing to issue an ESA letter. So she really did see this as an opportunity to provide a valuable service to qualifying members of the community. And she was surprised to learn that the way Greater Guide was kind of operating its business was not consistent with what she understood to have been happening. She has never been the subject of any disciplinary proceeding in any other jurisdiction since, with respect to the licenses that she holds. And she reasonably believed that her role was just reviewing those records in accordance with Section 9.01C of the APA's Code of Conduct, which allows a psychologist to review records and provide an opinion. And what she was doing was essentially looking at the information and saying, hey, would this be consistent with someone who would be eligible? But that was not a diagnosis, and it was not, certainly not something that would have warranted issuing a letter based on that record review, which is why she believed further review or assessment or consultation was happening after she performed her intermediary screening. She never issued any diagnosis, contrary to what's, in the letter, and just had reason to believe that there was going to be further verification of the information before any letter was issued. So as a result of this complaint process, she did discover that, Greater Guide was engaging in business practices that were not transparent and with which she did not agree. And her recourse at that point was to promptly terminate that relationship, which she did. But ultimately, because she did not issue the letter in question, there's nothing indicating that she was aware of it prior to receiving the board complaint. We do request dismissal under these circumstances.
Thank you, Mr. Gregorian. Dr. Hansen, thank you for being here. So my question is, I'm looking at the letter which is in the record. It has your name on the top, and then there is a Scottsdale address, a phone number, and a mypsychologygroup.com email address. When did you become aware that this letter was issued by the contractor that you were contracted with?
It was not until this complaint came to light and I had received these documents from DL.
And when was that, roughly, months ago?
August, I think.
August.
Yeah.
And after we received this letter, you realized that, this letter was issued without your knowledge or consent. How quickly after that did you inform Greater Guide or take steps to inform maybe AW or whoever needed to be informed that, this was I issued an error and it was issued wrongfully in your name?
I did it as soon as I could. I didn't call them and inform them that this was happening, and I was very confused, and I just decided that this was not the right place for me to be. And so I spoke with my lawyer, and she helped facilitate that termination.
So you contacted Greater Guide when you were informed of this letter.
Yes.
Did you contact AW?
No, my understanding it was like a fictitious, made up, person, so.
So in so is I'm trying to understand what AW would Because I mean, there's something in the rec some indication in the record that AW is just, some tester that is trying to test the Greater Guide website. But again, that's just my impression. I don't know that because, it's sort of drawing an inference from the records in front of me. So what sort of facts lead you to that sort of temporary assessment?
The temporary assessment
That
of
AW might be some fictitious person trying to test the Greater Guide website.
I think because it's stated that, or I can't remember exactly, but that was kind of my understanding. It was like that it was coming from the lawyer who pres or represented the competitor. So.
Okay. And I'm looking at the Greater Guide contract, and is there anything in the contract that you entered into with Greater Guide that would have given you sort of a cause for concern at the time you entered the contract about the kinds of activities Greater Guide was engaged in, or the kind of responsibility for diagnosing or sort of the intermediate analysis, as was described to us, that you had to conduct as a part of the contract with Greater Guide?
I mean, there was nothing, at the time. I mean, looking back, I wish I would have had a lawyer review it, because I think there was a lot of legalese in there that I just was not, I was too trusting, essentially, and coming from like a government, working for the government and nonprofit organizations, I never had a reason to doubt their authenticity or, so this was new to me and definitely a learning experience. And
And then going back to the letter that was issued in your name, can you look at the signature that was in the letter and tell us if that is your signature or not?
no, I don't believe that was my signature. I'm not sure how they obtained that. I mean, it could have, I don't know, to be honest. Let me just look at it.
So the services agreement that was signed with Greater Guide, it looks like it was signed via DocuSign because that's the header in the document. And then the covered entity lists you, Dr. Hansen, as and then on top of that, there's a signature on in our PDF packet. It's page 42. So my assumption is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that signature in your contract with Greater Guide was sort of like a online signature that it sort of like just looks like a scribble, but it's done by your hand, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And you aren't saying that that's your regular signature. Your regular signature might be different.
I mean, it's similar to that. I mean, the best I could with, the instruments that I had.
Okay. All right, that's all the questions I have. Dr. Medina, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, when did you contract with this company, Dr. Hansen?
In 2020.
How many files roughly would you say you reviewed for them?
It's hard to say. I mean, probably over 100.
Okay. What is the typical content of those files that you review?
It's just the answers to the responses from that questionnaire and the name.
That's all the information you have. Do you have records of treatment from treatment plans
No, nothing.
indicating the the emotional support animal as part of their treatment?
No.
Okay. And so what qualifies someone to have an emotional support animal?
Well, basically, from the kind of their those preliminary questions, I determined if they could benefit from an emotional support animal with the understanding that I thought it was an intermediary process that they would go on for further evaluation.
But you were signing letters for them.
No, I did not sign the letter.
So you never wrote letters with your signature for them for the
No,
clients.
no.
Okay. So basically, after you, there would be another, like an evaluator.
Right, exactly.
Well, I'm sorry. Wouldn't that be like an automated process? I mean, are those the questions? Are the questions that are included in the packet all the questions that are asked? If someone has had depression symptoms for the past 6 months, anxiety.
I don't understand the question. I'm sorry.
So, which of the questions do you look at and you say, yeah, let's pass it on to an evaluator?
So it's based on a constellation of symptoms. So looking at the anxiety, depressive symptoms, and the overall score. So it was a 45 out of 50, I believe. I think that was the number. And based on that, there isn't an actual like cutoff, but I base it on like the overall application or the summary of all the different responses.
I mean, as a provider, do you not think that the treating therapist, whether it's a master's level or doctoral level, would be the one to write that letter? I mean, this is a letter mill service, right? Like they just write letters and send them, and that's what they do. Wouldn't it make sense to have the letters come? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out like how this is, you know. Why wouldn't someone get a letter from their therapist?
They could, but some of them don't have therapists, is my understanding.
I don't have any further questions. Yes.
Yes, Mr. Gregorian, you may make closing
Thank you.
remarks.
Not a closing remark. I just in regard to one of your questions earlier, you were asking about how do we know that AW is not a legitimate patient? And if you look at the complaint submitted by DL on page 2, it indicates that the questionnaire was completed by one of our investigators. Our investigator ordered the letter, and that it was the investigator who received the letter, under that was issued under Dr. Hansen's name. And so I think based on that information, it did not appear that AW was a patient or, somebody who was an individual or a member of the public who was doing this, but rather somebody who was posing as a potential individual seeking one of these letters. And I think based on that was the determination that this was an investigator and not someone who was, adversely affected by the issuance of this letter.
Thank you. Yeah, I did see that. I thank you for putting that in the record, in the oral proceeding. At this time, actually, I want to go into executive session for legal advice.
Second.
Motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. No open session. I see Dr. Stewart. Good morning. It's 9:23 a.m., and we are discussing the second case on the agenda with respect to Dr. Hansen. Dr. Medina, do you have any further questions at this time?
Thank you, Mr. Geiner. Yes, I do. Dr. Hansen, what is the training and education you have on evaluating emotional support animals recommending who is eligible and when it's appropriate to recommend that an emotional support animal for a patient?
When I first started working for Greater Guide, I did ask for some training, and I looked did some training or I looked for training on my own. However, I wasn't able to find very much out there in terms of training or at that time. So yeah, very, very little in that regard.
No further questions on my end, Mr. Viner.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. Yeah, I don't have any questions per se. I just want to note that Greater Guide is a Delaware corporation. At least that's the address that Greater Guide has provided, and that's at page 36 of our PDF. Ms. Trigrigorian or Dr. Hansen, do you have any closing remarks? Or actually, wait a second, Dr. Medina.
It's okay. No, go ahead. I'm so sorry with the
Yeah,
closing remarks.
no,
I
yeah.
was gonna close the motion.
Yes, just very briefly, if I could add that Dr. Hansen's training and expertise was sufficient to allow her to review the information that was submitted through the online questionnaire and determine whether the symptoms and the conditions that were being reported were consistent with a mental health condition that would qualify for a diagnosis. And the standard for in terms of an ESA animal or an ESA letter is whether or not somebody suffers from a mental health diagnosis that impairs one or more major life activities that would be alleviated by having an emotional support animal. So for purposes of that intermediary review, and I should also point out that the information submitted by the investigator in this case isn't necessarily indicative of the other, online submissions because there was, I think, a area for somebody to add in and supplement and say, yes, I have been treated by a therapist and I have been diagnosed with these conditions in the past and provide additional information that, if verified, would entitle them to an emotional support animal and the documentation to secure their right to that to have that emotional support animal. So that is the extent of what Dr. Hansen was doing when she was reviewing the information.
Thank you. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
I apologize for entering late ahead of previous engagement. This may have already been asked, and I apologize in advance. In reading through the materials,
Dr. Stewart, I'm sorry, this is Jean Galvin. Because you joined the meeting late and were not part of the initial questioning and the opening statements and board members, start of deliberation, I would think that it would be advisable if you were to recuse from this matter entirely and not participate.
Mr. Chair, I respectfully recuse myself from this matter and will not participate.
All
Thank
right,
you,
Dr.
Dr.
Stewart. Okay, so then let's go into our deliberations about this case. And since I was the lead in providing the summary, I'll probably get us started, or I'll actually get us started. So I have some sort of concerns with just emotional support animal letter mills in general. We have seen a few cases at the Arizona Psychology Board concerning this, and I don't want to sort of minimize the issue by saying, oh, this was I did not have knowledge about this from the psychologist's perspective, because there are these letter mills out there, and appears that that's essentially the defense for Dr. Hansen is, yeah, there was this entity called Greater Guide, and they were in the business of evaluating people for eligibility for an emotional support animal letter. So I think there was some awareness on Dr. Hansen's part in terms of what Greater Guide's purpose was. And there is a contract which we assume that any reasonable person can understand a contract and understand the terms of the contract before entering into them. It doesn't need sort of a sophisticated lawyer evaluation of a contract. So there is a written agreement between Greater Guide and Dr. Hansen, indicating the roles and responsibilities of Greater Guide and Dr. Hansen. And I think, I do understand that, from Dr. Hansen's perspective, her evaluation, at least again from her perspective, was an intermediate evaluation. But that doesn't change the nature of the Greater Guide business model. It's an ESA letter issuing entity. So I would have, if I were in Dr. Hansen's shoes, I would have exercised much more caution in entering into this contract with Greater Guide, because as a psychologist, ultimately it's the psychologist's responsibility to, make sure that they're using their knowledge, skills, and experience to actually evaluate a person. And there may be a debate in the psychology community about, how to evaluate somebody for an emotional support animal eligibility, but it feels like the 15 or so questions that any entrant into the Greater Guide customer base only answered these 15 questions, and that was the basis for the intermediate evaluation. And I feel, and again, I'm not a psychologist, but it feels like that almost is like a checkbox system where, it's easy for people to game the system and say, oh yeah, I'm highly stressed and I'm highly depressed and all of these things. And just looking at that cold record and sending the person off to the next stage of the evaluation process seems like, it seems like there isn't enough from a psychology perspective to even, knowledgeably evaluate anybody for that next step. And that's maybe I'm rambling a little bit. I think Greater Guide shares in some of the problem that we have identified with ESA letters in general. And I would like us to refer Greater Guide to, I think it's a Delaware corporation. That's why I stated that before we went into discussions. Being a Delaware corporation, my instinct would be, my preference would be to refer to the Delaware Attorney General to look into fraudulent practices by Greater Guide, and then they'll have their own process and see what action, if any, they want to take against Greater Guide. And as for Dr. Hansen, again, SciPac receiving state, the letter was, even if it was a tester, the letter was issued in her name to an Arizona person, even if that person was fictitious. From the face of the letter, it's issued to somebody in Arizona. So I have concern, not with the issuance of the letter, but with the sort of lack of actual evaluation that occurred at that intermediate step that Dr. Hansen described. And we know that she reviewed this AW file and also maybe 100 other files. So I have concerns with that evaluation, that intermediate evaluation. So my preference would be to send it to the full board with a recommendation that the board issue a letter of concern, so it doesn't rise to a disciplinary action, I don't think. I think there is honesty and integrity that I see from Dr. Hansen. I mean, she really honestly believes that she was the intermediate reviewer. And I do believe her when she says she had nothing to do with this letter that was issued. So it doesn't rise to disciplinary in my mind, but there is a concern here. And I would send it to the full board with the recommendation of issuing a letter of concern. Sorry for rambling too much, Dr. Medina, if you want to share
Thank
your
you,
thoughts.
Mr. Diner. Yes, I fully agree with you. I do believe that, this letter maybe had Dr. Hansen's signature without her being aware of this. I am very concerned about the lack of training. An emotional support animal is not an evidence-based treatment for depression or anxiety. And while there is a place for an emotional support animal, to me, it has to come from the treating therapist. In which this animal is integrated into the treatment plan, and there is a role for it. Looking over a file would never tell me whether someone might be appropriate for an emotional support animal or not. So that is one side of it. The second side, that to me is concerning. Dr. Hansen has been a psychologist for well over 10 years. And so this is a letter mill. And whether it's at midpoint or at some point, it was determined that it is a good idea to participate, in this practice. And this is not an acceptable or ethical practice, in my opinion. So I fully agree with you that this needs to go to the full board for review. So would you
Ms.
like?
Gavin.
If you're going to make that recommendation to go to the full board, could you please offer a possible cite to the statutes with respect to unprofessional conduct, a provision or provisions? And then secondly, if you're going to make a recommendation that the board refer, greater guide to the Attorney General, we know that it's incorporated in Delaware, but we also know that everyone's incorporated in Delaware. So if they're doing business somewhere else, give the staff the opportunity or the discretion to notify the appropriate state Attorney General.
Thank you, Ms. Galvin. So I'll make a motion to refer this case to the full board for a possible violation of 2061, subsection 16G, which is engaging or offering to engage as a psychologist in activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience, with a recommendation that a letter of concern be issued for the possible violation just stated. And I'll also, part of the motion is to refer Greater Guide to the appropriate Attorney General, maybe Delaware or its principal place of business, for investigating in potentially fraudulent activities that Greater Guide engaged in being a ESA letter mail.
Second.
There's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. Dr. Hansen, thank you for being here, and Mr. Gregorian, thank you as well. All right, so then let's quickly go to number three, which is approval of minutes of September 18, 2024, CSC regular session and executive session minutes. I am recused, so would somebody make a motion, second, and do the approval, please?
Move that the minutes be approved.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Motion
Carries.
none opposed, the motion carries.
Very good.
How did we do, Mr. Diner?
Oh, you did excellent.
We struggled with
Okay,
it.
let's go to number the third complaint on the agenda, which is 24-32 against David Weinstock. And I think Dr. Stewart, who is the lead on this one? I'm
Me. Certainly, Mr. Chair. So this is a summary for complaint number 24-32 against Dr. David Weinstock, holder of license number 3613, issued in December 2003. In January, the board received a complaint from NP, or father, alleging that Dr. Weinstock provided false testimony in the court, questioning his objectivity and reliability as an expert witness, as Dr. Weinstock completed the comprehensive family evaluation for the case. Failure to comply with mandatory reporting obligations, forcing children to directly confront an adult based on their disclosure of abuse, Dr. Weinstock's lack of direct engagement and scrutiny in the evaluation process, excluding critical evidence in his report, the staggering $47,000 cost of the report, and an increase in litigation as a result of this report. Licensee responded to the complaint in a timely manner. It is why Dr. Weinstock's position that he did not engage in any unprofessional conduct in this case and conducted himself at all times within the standards of practice applicable to a forensic psychologist. The court had allocated 4 months to complete the evaluation, but due to the volume of work needed to be done, the deadline was extended. The report was completed 1 year after it was assigned. Father was dissatisfied with the court's decision of awarded joint legal decision-making, with mother having presumptive decision-making authority. Contrary to father's belief, the court did not find credible evidence to support a finding that mother sexually abused the children. Neither party objected to the admission of Dr. Weinstock's report into evidence for the evidentiary hearing. Father's lawyer took the opportunity to cross-examine Dr. Weinstock in two hearings, and Dr. Weinstock was cross-examined at length. Although father joined with mother in proposing that Dr. Weinstock complete the CFE and agreed to pay 50% of the cost, he quickly changed his mind. Mother offered to pay the continuing cost of the evaluation pending the court's consideration of reallocation of the cost later in the case. Following trial, the court ordered father to reimburse mother for his portion of the CFE, roughly $18,000. Dr. Weinstock denies that he had to make a DCS report, as the initial report took place several months before Dr. Weinstock was appointed by the court. And this concludes my summary to the board.
Thank you, Dr. Medina. So at this time, I don't see complainant NP present, but if you are, kindly unmute yourself, state your initials for the record, and then you may make a statement of up to 5 minutes.
Mr. Chair, the complainant MP indicated due to a family matter, he would be attending late, so I did not see that he has made it yet.
Okay, then we might take the complainant out of order once they join. So at this time, let's go to Dr. Weinstock. I see you're here. Thank you for being here. And I believe you're here with your attorney, Mr. Cohen. Thank you for being here as well. Please introduce yourselves and you may make a statement of up to 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Diner and Dr. Stewart and Dr. Medina. My name is Larry Cohen. I'm counsel for Dr. David Weinstock, who's sitting to my right.
And I'm Dr. David Weinstock.
So I'll take 5 minutes or less. This case rose out of, to call it highly contentious litigation would be an extraordinary understatement. This was really intensively contentious litigation that involved very significant matters with regard to the allegation of sexual assault on at least one and perhaps two children. The volume of material given you is more than I've ever seen in any case before the board, almost 3,500 pages in the complaint, and we submitted over 217 pages in the response. You certainly have a vast amount of material that you looked at, and my comments, in particularly noting what Dr. Medina had to say, assumes that you've looked through all of that, and we appreciate your doing so. From our perspective, you have two very different views about what went on here. I stated this in the letter, but let me state it again to sort of make the general point about our position. In 5 minutes, I could not do justice to addressing the substantive issues. But the fundamental difference here, I believe, is that NP took a result-driven approach to raising a complaint here, focusing on the outcomes that he thinks should have occurred, and then going back and drawing as much as he could information that would support the objections he had to what took place. He's his own client and he's advocating for himself. So to say, in a board complaint, the issue is whether or not the psychologist has met the standards of care under the applicable statutes and the ethics guidelines. And while he refers to them at times, the essence of his complaint is these things didn't support my conclusions. Dr. Weinstock, and I'm sure all of you have read his report, approached this matter from a scientific standpoint. Again, it's a highly contentious case. Other psychologists might have been drawn into the emotions that were involved since the issues were so contentious. But Dr. Weinstock throughout took a scientific approach. And by that, I mean, he generated hypotheses for the matters that were before him. He tried to collect data relevant to those hypotheses. We went through and in our response detailed all the data that he tried to collect. We identified the data he wanted to collect and couldn't. And then from that data, he looked at the hypotheses and determined or assessed whether the extent to which they were met or not met. And based upon his reviewing the data as it applied to the hypotheses, he generated conclusions and made recommendations. He was not the decision maker in this case. The decision maker was the court. The court went through a very deliberative process. It looked at Dr. Weinstock's report. It accepted some of his recommendations, disagreed with others. The point, though, is that it was the court that made the decision here after a very deliberative process, 2.5 days of hearing. Dr. Weinstock was cross-examined there. He was cross-examined in an earlier proceeding. The fact that his report was admitted in evidence is not trivial because no one said this is a report that's not credible in terms of meeting scientific criteria. I'm sure all of you have heard of something called the Daubert analysis. Either of the parties here could have raised a Daubert issue about whether or not it met scientific integrity. And for purposes of the case, neither one did. So it was admitted in evidence. And then Dr. Weinstock was cross-examined. So again, this is not a case contrary to what MP said, in which there was subjectivity and an agenda in trying to reach a particular outcome. Quite the contrary, it was simply taking the issues that were presented, generating alternative hypotheses about those issues, collecting data, and then drawing conclusions that seemed to follow from the data. Respectfully, I don't think there's anything in the report that one could look at and say that Dr. Weinstock had an outcome-oriented approach here. The cost was indeed substantial. It was substantial, if you look at the volume of work that was done, the data that had to be gone through and collected and then gone through, the number of interviews that took place. It was expensive, but it was expensive because of the role and the responsibility involved. There were issues raised about staff. I have a footnote in which I misstated that Dr. Weinstock charged less than his staff, and I apologize for that. It was the other way around, but he used staff to try to keep the cost down. Where does all this end up going? The board is not, and it should not be, engaged in looking at the litigation, but this litigation is going on, and NP is continuing to press his points. It is his concerns about what should happen, his belief in them, how the case should have turned out. There was a hearing as recently as yesterday on the question of whether or not Dr. Weinstock's fee should be reimbursed to the mother. So Dr. Weinstock is still being looked at in the case, and no doubt the determination that's made by the screening committee and ultimately the board, if it goes to that level, is something that the NP would like to use because he's pursuing a result. And again, respectfully, I appreciate the board will make its own determination, but the focus of his complaint was really on retrying his case and trying to be persuasive that the conclusions he thought followed were supported by his interpretation of the data. We submit that Dr. Weinstock did what one would do in a forensic analysis in a highly contentious case, is that he abstracted himself from the issues involved, or the subjective issues involved, that he focused in on his responsibility to conduct a scientific analysis of what took place. He did that. He backed it up by providing the data that he used to support that, and presented his recommendations to the court. And the court was his client, so he presented it to the court. The court then used it, as you all saw, in its September 13, 2023 ruling. Dr. Weinstock is available to answer questions. I'm sure you have loads of questions. How could you not, with almost 3,700 pages of material? So we are prepared for you to go ahead and ask lots of questions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Questions for Dr. Weinstock at this time? Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Chair. Dr. Weinstock, thank you for being here this morning with Mr. Cohen. So I have read your report, and Mr. Cohen, I think, is accurate in when he says that I didn't see any questioning about the standard used, the Daubert standard. As I understand the Daubert standard, it is to assist the trial judge in determining credibility of a witness or the witness professionalism to qualify. Not only do they have to be an expert, but they also have to be an expert in the area in which they're testifying. Is that correct, Dr. Weinstein?
That's my understanding. It's Daubert is related to the concept of junk science, trying to yes. keep junk science out of court. And it is expected that both the witness testifying has expertise and what the witness is testifying about is scientifically evidenced.
Dr. Stewart, could I please make a comment on that?
Please, Mr. Cohen, please.
The issue for the courts in their gatekeeper role in cases where there is expert testimony is to make two determinations. The rule in Arizona is Rule 702 of the Arizona Rules of Evidence, and it requires the court to look at two things, basically. Number one, is this person qualified by education, training, experience, and so forth to offer opinions on this subject? But the second part of it is the part that gets all the attention in the case law in Arizona, around the country, the federal courts, and especially the Supreme Court. And that question is the approach that was taken scientifically credible? And this, the Daubert case itself lays out four criteria to do that, one of which, frankly, focuses on the question of using hypotheses to test the issues that are presented. And the question is whether or not there is scientific integrity to the process. So my comment before about the fact that no Daubert challenge was raised here goes to the point that neither of the parties involved, at least as we see going through this process, ever went to the court and said there is a problem with the scientific integrity of this. And Your Honor, as a gatekeeper, you should not consider this as part of the evidence in this case. My point was only that through two hearings, and through motion practice, that issue was never raised. It's being raised now, directly or indirectly, by NP in his complaint, but it was never raised by the parties before the court, so the court could play that gatekeeper role. Thank you for letting me offer my response.
Mr. Cohen, you're a mind reader, because you just answered the next two questions that I had, but let me move on. Additionally, NP indicated that the protracted time involved in rendering a report, and yet, as I recall reading the materials, there was an extension granted by the court. Is my understanding correct?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Could I throw something on top of that as well, please?
Absolutely.
Yeah, the extension gets granted because Dr. Weinstock asks for it. And in the litigated process, the parties have the opportunity to come in and say to the court, we disagree with an extension being granted and so forth. That didn't happen.
So it, as that did not happen, and as the protracted time in rendering a report, as you've indicated in your opening statements, as Mr. Cohen indicated, it was due to the voluminous amounts of materials and time expended in making this this court, this family evaluation. Is that correct?
That is correct. And I should add, as identified in the report, and even as referenced earlier, there are procedural limitations in terms of cooperation with things like payment. And that delays a process, which certainly protracted the amount of time.
On another point that NP raises, that as a mandatory reporter for allegations of sexual abuse, it seems like that Department of Child Services did conduct assessments. I think on one of them, the initial investigator found some substantial material available, but then upon reinvestigation, it was found none. Is my understanding correct?
I would couch it a little differently. What Mr. Flooring found was the child reported molestation. I don't think he found any other evidence besides that. He did substantiate based on that. Two later reports about molestation while mother was supervising the children were unsubstantiated by DCS. I believe that was because they found the children were not reliable, that they were reporting abuse while supervised. I want to emphasize in terms of the not reporting to DCS, I spoke with Mr. Flooring. It's in the report. I talked to the DCS investigator about these issues. So I'm not quite sure about an allegation that I didn't report. It was very clear that the information I had was the foundation of the three reports that had already been made.
And again, Dr. Stewart, if I could add, this matter also went to the local law enforcement authority, which also conducted an investigation and found that there was no probable cause to go forward. So the issue was looked at by multiple parties. So there was follow through, and that was also included in Dr. Weinstock's report.
Excellent. Thank you so much for that clarification. One more point, and then I will stop asking questions for a bit. It's just gone. I'll suspend my question asking for right now, if I may reserve the right to follow up later on. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Any further questions, Dr. Medina?
I do not have any questions at this point, Mr. Leiner.
I don't have questions either. Yes, Dr. Stewart.
Yes, I did remember. Thank you. So in NP's complaints, and I don't know that I totally agree with Mr. Cohen that it's an attempt to get the board to relitigate the child custody issue, but it would be something strikingly similar to that. Looking back on it, is there anything that you would have done differently or that you would have directed your staff to do differently in this case, kind of as hindsight?
Well, other than not taking the case in the first place, I can't think of anything that I would have done differently.
Okay. Thank you. I have no further questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Dr. Stewart. Anything in closing that Mr. Cohen or Dr. Weinstock would like to say?
No, I think it's been fully covered by the opening, by the materials, and by the questions by Dr. Stewart. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Okay, then let's go into our deliberations, and I'll call on Dr. Medina since she got us started.
Thank you, Mr. Diner. You know, this was, needless to say, a very lengthy case with a very large volume of materials. But, you know, ultimately for me is that I see anything in the procedure and the process, right, that would raise any concerns. And I do not, I could not find anything that I would be concerned about in what I saw. So those are my comments. I'm sure
thank
Dr.
you.
Stewart has more. You're welcome.
Dr. Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar. Yes, Dr. Medina covered that quite well. And I also could not find anything of substance. I think looking at the complaint by itself, without having the respondents' materials available to us, I think some of the complaints are, you know, certainly seem horrific. However, in looking at the response and then logically looking at the time required, the amount of money, the staff time, investigative time, the allegations were reported to DCS, and they eventually cleared the mother, apparently. And I think, you know, I have to go back to Mr. Cohen's statements that, you know, sometimes no one's going to, if there's a child custody evaluation, the parents are not getting along to begin with. And one or the other parent is going to feel slighted. They're going to feel that they didn't have their day in court, or that the court or someone did not honor how they feel about things. But I'm not finding anything to rise to a level of unprofessional conduct. I have a motion if the chair would entertain it.
Sure.
I move that the case against Dr. Weinstock, case number 2432, be dismissed.
Second.
There's a motion and a second, and just as a matter of discussion, I completely agree with what Dr. Stewart said and what Dr. Medina said. It's a contentious child custody proceeding, and we have seen a few of those, and you know, many times it's sort of an attempt by one parent, because they did not obtain the result they wanted in court, to then sort of go against the psychologist, court appointed or otherwise, and sort of see if the board of psychology might find something and stick something on the psychologist. I mean, there's definitely a flavor of that here. Don't want to sort of assume the intentions of the complainant here, but there's a flavor of that at least. So there's a motion and a second. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. None opposed, the motion carries. Thank you, Dr. Weinstock, for being here, and Mr. Cohen.
Thank you to everyone.
Thank you for your time today.
Yeah.
All right, so that takes us to adjournment, and I exercise my moderator's privilege to adjourn at 10:02 a.m. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Mr. Dinar.
Thank you.